Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf and Thomas Drantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio, and you can text in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Apparently, Drantz quoted Hamlet, and it just went right over my head last time. Producer Rash brought that to my attention last segment. I'm just not cultured enough for the show, and that's what I'm learning. Jamie would have got it, and I didn't.
Jamie would have got it.
Jamie right. would have got it.
What was it? It was the slings and arrows of major hockey misfortune.
Outrageous.
Outrageous hockey
outrageous.
Misfortune.
I'm sorry, Capilano University.
DCIT let me down.
Sorry.
650, 650.
Don't blame your schooling.
Okay. Sorry, it's just my fault, actually.
Shakespeare himself went to the equivalent of Cap College.
We all did.
Yeah, the Elizabethan equivalent.
Anyway, it is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, the Elizabethan equivalent, and Thomas Drantz. Now joining us, Pete Blackburn, host of What Chaos. Not to put you on the spot, Pete, but do you? We kind of need you to mix in some Shakespeare quotes as we go.
We absolutely do not. Do not worry about that at all, Pete. How are you, bud?
Okay, great. I'm great. That was a little concerning to start. I'm not really super brushed up on Shakespeare at this point in my life.
Neither am I. I was looking to you to help me out.
Nor should you be. Hey, Pete. We got to start by asking you about the Boston Bruins. Why is Brad Marchand so much better at a TNT interview than anyone else in the NHL?
Because he is so much better in the personality department than anybody else in the NHL. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. He is, if you're going to mix in a war of words, you do not want to target Brad Marchand. I guarantee he will win every time. He's unbelievable. He was our first guest for What Chaos. We did that intentionally because we knew that he was going to be like ready to go and play our game. And he's so good at it. He's just regardless of how you feel about him as a player, as a rat, or whatever you want to attribute to his name derogatorily, he is an incredible interview and an incredible personality. And I think we are continuing to see that. Even when he gets older and kind of is taking on more leadership with the Bruins, it doesn't change how fun he is off the ice.
There's a old PK Subban quote said on a podcast, and I absolutely do not remember it verbatim, so I'm going to paraphrase here. But he talked about how he had an understanding of the need to put on a show, the idea of a hockey player as more than just a hockey player or more than just an athlete, but also an entertainer. And name-checked Brad Marchand, a guy who he had huge battles with during sort of the heyday of that Bruins-Montreal Canadiens rivalry, as a guy who got it too and that he enjoyed competing mm-hmm. against him. I feel like we don't have enough of that showmanship in the league these days, but I do think Brad Marchand's the exception.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's getting better. I think that you're looking at a lot of guys. Yeah, I think a lot of guys understand now that like you can be a very competitive player and a very serious hockey player while also not necessarily feeling like you have to be so serious all the time when in front of a camera or behind a microphone or something like that. Like it did kind of like ruin my life finding out that PK Subban and Brad Marchand were friendly off the ice, but it was, you know, it makes a lot of sense when you consider where they both come from in that approach.
Who's your short list of guys that get it? Like for me, Marchand would be like the king, right? He's got the crown.
Yeah.
And like Matthew Tkachuk, I think gets it. I think he's got that in him. Who else is on your short list of guys that understand and really play into the entertainment aspect of hockey?
Seth Jarvis is up there as well. He's
That's a good shout.
And just speaking from like my own personal experience with guys, like Nick Foligno is absolutely there. Joey DeCord is a new one coming up. Like he's so fun and just kind of goofy. And like, I think you're starting to see a new wave of players who feel a little bit more comfort in just being themselves and not feeling like it necessarily has to be a reflection on how seriously they take the job.
Kind of think Nikita Zadorov might be one of those guys too.
Yeah. Good call.
He's here with the Boston Bruins next week in Vancouver, and obviously things have not gone according to plan in Boston. But what has he brought to the team, and with the coaching change, is he kind of finding his role a little bit more there?
Well, I mean, first things first, what he's brought is a lot of penalty minutes. It's been tough to stomach off the starting line, but he has started to show like more of the positive returns, because like you guys know as well as anybody, like when you sign up for Nikita Zadorov, you're signing up for the good and the bad, and it's going to be an adventure at times. But like in Vancouver, he showed what he can bring down the stretch and like the positive impact that he can have at times. You just haven't seen it enough in the early returns in Boston. Like it's been a majority of it has been negative. And like this week, he finally scored his first goal that wasn't an empty netter and hammered a shot from the point. And like, you just need to start seeing more of that. You need to start seeing like better decisions with the puck and like more physicality. I know he's not been amazing at clearing out the front of the net. Like, you need to see more of that, but it's not been as heavily negative as it has appeared in Boston the early return. So there's definitely room for improvement for him.
I do think it's tough too, when a player like that, who, you know, we saw in the playoffs, we saw down the stretch in Vancouver, was like, oh man, he won all these people over. People here in Vancouver on our text box still text in almost every day being like, oh man, they missed Nikita Zadorov, they should have re-signed him. I almost feel like it's tough to fully grade what a player can do, I guess, until, like, especially when they're a player like Nikita Zadorov, until they're put into a situation where they're playing those high stakes games and can actually, you know, win people over with the way they play.
Agreed. And like, I think that Zadorov, a big reason why I liked that signing so much is like the Bruins are in a position where they don't necessarily have to overly rely on him in terms of time on ice. And like, if he can be a four or five kind of a defenseman for them, I think what he brings in terms of like a player makeup and intensity perspective and physicality perspective down the stretch on the blue line is something that they've sorely needed. They just don't have that kind of defenseman and big body who instills fear and instills like intensity in what he brings to a lineup. And, I think the Bruins fans are going to really come around on him if he limits the negativity and the downsides of his game and they actually get into the playoffs. That's a big question mark at this point. But if they get there, I think that he's going to have a positive impact for this team.
Pete, I know you pay attention to what's going on around the league pretty closely, and I'm curious to get your thoughts, because the Canucks are hosting the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, and the Columbus Blue Jackets are neck and neck with the San Jose Sharks for teams that I find myself gravitating to watching on a nightly basis, that if you'd told me that I'd be watching like a lot of them in August, I would have said, no, you're wrong. No chance. I'm life's too short. Instead, the Blue Jackets are super fun. The Sharks are super fun. Who's on your, do you have anyone to add? Anyone who's caught your eye around the league that is just playing fun hockey in a way you maybe didn't expect?
Yeah, I think on top of the two that you already mentioned, an easy one for me is the Minnesota Wild. Like, that's a team that even when they've been good or, you know, respectable in the standings, they haven't been particularly interesting to watch. And I think that that's changed this year. Matt Boldy rules Kaprizov on an absolute bender of a productive season. And so, like, I think that a lot of what Minnesota has right now is both very good and very interesting. And when you consider the fact too that like this is the final season of dead cap, like they could be going places, maybe not this year in the postseason, but like if this continues, they're going to have a real nice shot at it. And then on top of that, like, did anybody expect to find the Washington Capitals entertaining and interesting? Probably not. They've both been surprising, but also, like, in terms of entertainment factor, they're a team that can win on any given night, but also a team that their goalie can shoot the puck directly into his own net. Like, that is entertainment factor for me. So the Caps are super entertaining, both positively and negatively.
With the Caps too, it's not just the own goal, but it's the way that, you know, everyone's roasting him post game, right? Like there's a certain vibe. There's a certain vibe to them. Honestly, they kind of remind me of last year's Canucks. They feel like the all vibes team this year, where it's like, yeah, sure, they're getting lucky. There's been some good fortune there, but they're also actually just playing good hockey, and they're just a ton of fun to watch. The Canucks, on the other hand, feel like they're hockey's 49ers right now. You know what I mean? Where, like, granted, their results are better, but the just overall overwhelming amount of absences feels like it's beginning to sort of eat into the fun factor of watching this team play. What are you noticing?
I would agree with that, but I would like classify them as like the jury's still out.
Mm.
And I do enjoy watching the Canucks, and there are a lot of, I think that for me, the Canucks watching experience is more like individual based.
Right.
Like they have a lot of guys that I really like watching and I'm really interested in. But I'm like kind of reserving what I think of them or how I judge them as a full unit, because they're just not fully put together right now. But like, I'll tell you a guy that has been awesome, that has like really won me over this season, is Kiefer Sherwood. Like, I love watching Kiefer Sherwood, whether it's the positive stuff or like the wild chaotic stuff. He is just box office to me.
Kind of came out of nowhere too. It's just like he was in Nashville, and it, like, he seemed good when they played against each other in the playoff series. I think a lot of fans were frustrated by him, but I don't know. I didn't expect this level of Kiefer Sherwood. I don't know if like Rick Tocchet unlocked something, but you're right. It does feel like when you look at the Canucks and you're looking for entertainment value, it's like these individual players. Like you could probably throw, obviously, Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, but even like Connor Garland in there this year has had his individual moments. I do wonder, like, is that kind of due to the way they play, or is it just hey, waiting for Miller, Demko, all these guys to come back before they fully unlock their true potential, I guess?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is. I mean, I think that on a player-to-player basis, you do have a lot of guys who, you know, again, to throw out the term box office, like there are a lot of guys that are just very fun to watch, like high energy, high skill players, just, you know, they kind of play like an intense brand. You mentioned Connor Garland, like very intense player. Kiefer Sherwood, very intense player. And then you've got like the skill guys like Pettersson and Besser and DeBrusk and Hughes. And so like they kind of check a lot of boxes. And I also think like from my point of view too, there's nothing that beats from an East Coast perspective, like a late night Canucks game, especially when they're at home, because I think the atmosphere and the energy when that team's playing well in their own building is really tough to match from an atmosphere perspective.
Yeah, it's a scene. It's a scene.
Yeah, right.
I do think there's something systemic, though, in terms of the Canucks just being a lockdown defensive team that in some ways restrains, like, Quinn Hughes is always going to be worth the price of admission, right? And then, you know, when Demko's making incredible, like, scorpion kick saves and Pettersson's on form and JT Miller's doing power forward stuff and you've got scrappy guys like Garland on and on. I mean, there's a lot of individual things to enjoy, but ultimately this is not a team, I don't think, that, like, combines skills in a way to produce aesthetically pleasing hockey. That's not sort of the point.
No, yeah, I do think that like Tocchet's arrival has lessened the entertainment value, but in a way that should be appreciated by Canucks fans, where like it's not as wide open, it's not as loose, it's not as like unbelievably chaotic, but that is what ultimately puts you closer to being a team worth taking seriously as like a real contender.
Yeah, the Boudreaux era teams were fun, but there were limitations there. What Four Nations rosters are out. Want to get into that a little bit with you. Obviously, you're American. I assume you're a Patriot. I don't know. I don't know. I don't mean to be putting you on the spot.
Not in a Patriot way where you have to like question what I do early in the calendar year, but yeah, I refer to USA Hockey. Yeah,
Canucks in Washington, January 6th. By the way, so I'll be there as well. yeah, no one put together any dots there. Hey, did Team USA overthink their forward mix?
I'm like a little torn on it. Like I get it from a roster building perspective where, like, you know, if you're talking about Tage Thompson, you're talking about Cole Caulfield and like where they'd be filling roles on a lineup sheet and maybe they're not super equipped to do that. Like, I understand that. Like, I understand that you're going to have better success in the face-off dot with Brock Nelson versus Tage Thompson. Like, and if you want size, you don't want Cole Caulfield as your fourth liner. But I do, I think that there is a philosophical debate to be had about, like, when you're putting together national teams, do you just take the most skilled players and the best overall players and trust them and trust the coaching staff to piece it together and figure it out? Or do you, as a general manager and as a roster builder, try to eliminate some of those decisions and, like, pick players based on certain roles? I tend to lean, like, just take the best players and let the coach figure it out and adjust on the fly. But I can understand, like, it's not an inexcusable choice to take, like, a Brock Nelson over a Tage Thompson, especially when you're talking about, like, Tage Thompson's a very streaky player, very hot and cold player. And if you're talking about a four-game tournament, there's not a lot of runway for Tage Thompson to get hot. So, you know, I'm somewhere in the middle.
I've kind of been surprised, but I've seen some people be surprised that Matt Boldy made the roster, but I don't know.
Oh, that's a crazy take. Matt Boldy rules.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree. And it just feels like, I don't know if he's going underrated because he's in Minnesota and Kaprizov, he obviously takes all the headlines there. Like, is Matt Boldy underappreciated?
I mean, if you ask me, I don't think so, but
yeah.
I can't speak for everybody else. If anybody's making a stink about Boldy being on that roster, they're crazy because I think he could be a top six forward on that roster. He's so good right now.
The Americans as a whole, though, I don't know if the betting markets necessarily reflect it, but to me, I think everybody looking at this, it kind of feels like they're the clear favorites going into this. Would you agree with that?
The Americans?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Yeah, I think that they're probably the team that appears most bulletproof in terms of, like, having something in every area and something that's pretty solid. I mean, you look at Canada, their goaltending is obviously the big issue. Sweden's forward group is not as impressive as some of these other teams. And Finland, like, the blue line is a disaster. So, I mean, if you're talking about betting markets and weaknesses, I think USA is probably the strongest or just at least has the fewest noticeable weaknesses.
I'm pulling up the odds. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is FanDuel. Canada, plus 135, always the favorite. USA, plus 175. Sweden, plus 490. Finland, plus 700. At those odds, like, what? How is Sweden not pound for pound in the same weight class as the other two?
Yeah, I mean, they should at least be closer. Like, those odds shouldn't be as long. Like, their blue line is awesome. And their goaltending, very good, as long as, like, those guys play up to their potential. And, yeah, their forward group gets a little thin as you go down, but not in a way that, like, I look at that roster and say they can't win. Especially, like, Sweden in international play is usually pretty good.
So, Dom Lecision's model would have the U.S. as the favorite, by the way. So, U.S. at plus 175 is pretty decent juice, but my view is Sweden's should be in the same weight class as the other two. So if any of our listeners are keen on laying money, Sweden or the U.S., I think you got to ignore Canada, even if you think they're going to win. The juice just isn't there. Wait till they lose a game. Wait till they lose to the U.S. in the round robin and then hammer Canada if you think they got a shot with the goaltending that they've got. What does it mean for Team USA, though, Pete, to be going into this tournament and we're sort of looking at it and just saying, hey, this might be the most skilled team at the tournament? Does that represent a huge change from for you personally, just how you feel about it going into it from a chests out patriotic perspective, does it feel a lot different than it did in like Sochi and Vancouver where, yeah, we're the scrappy team?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that this is sort of like the signaling of an arrival. And I think that a lot of people in American hockey fans who have paid attention, like, they know the gap's been closed over the past, you know, a handful of years or however many years you want to slap on in terms of a number. But, like, without the availability of best on best to see it, now that we, like, actually have rosters in front of us and you can look at them all on the table in front of you, like, this might be the most talented USA team that you've seen, like, possibly in forever. And just to kind of see it side by side with Canada, and you say the Americans, like, they may not win this tournament. They may not have, like, the best overall team, but there's a debate. And I would argue that they don't have the obvious weakness that Canada does in net. Like, there's reason to feel good about the USA being a favorite in this tournament. So that to me kind of signals a turning of the page and an arrival for USA hockey.
Hey, Pete, really appreciate you taking the time, and looking forward to the Four Nations.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
There is Pete Blackburn, host of What Chaos.
What Americans don't realize is that Aiden Hill is just Canadian Chris Osgood. Aiden Hill is Canadian for Chris Osgood. We're going to be fine.
Every time I've watched Aiden Hill lately, I'm like, he's good.
He's totally good.
He's fine.
His save percentage isn't that great, but is good.
Yes.
But well, Canada's goaltending doesn't matter. We all know this.
Well, I don't know. Do you look at Canada as the favorite, or do you agree with Dom's model?
I never agree with Dom's model. It's not doing a good enough job pricing in regression. No, I think Team USA should be the favorite. They're the more complete team.
I agree too.
Like, they are.
I looked at the roster and I'm like, man, I just don't see. There's no holes like Pete mentioned.
They have there's no defender on Team Canada's roster as good as Quinn Hughes. Just because the public doesn't recognize that doesn't mean it's not true. Unfortunately, Canucks fans, while probably rooting for Team Canada, are very well aware the best defenseman on the planet plays for Team USA, right? What Canada, you know what Canada kind of reminds me of? Canada kind of reminds me of where Russian hockey was 20 years ago. Like, I look at this roster, I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure about their goaltending, and I think their blue line's the third best in the tournament too, but what Canada has is this level of, like, top-end artistry that no one can match.
Yeah.
Like McDavid, like that. I think Canada has, what, two of the best three forwards at this tournament, period.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'd pick MacKinnon second after McDavid, like, flat out.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think Team Canada has a ceiling because of their artistry, their dominance at the top end of their forward ranks that, yeah, they can absolutely win this tournament. That those MacKinnon and McDavid should be the two best players at this tournament. If you have the two best players at forward, at center, that tends to put you in a pretty good spot. Play them together. Let's go. I want to see them play together.
Yes, I agree. I do agree, though. Sweden, the most underrated team.
By far.
Heading into
5-1. 5-1. And their roster looks pound for pound every bit as good as Canada's.
Sweden always takes these tournaments incredibly seriously.
Yeah.
Not that, like, Canada and the U.S. won't, but this, like, these tournaments mean a lot to European players.
Well, and here's the other fun thing is, like, Finland always medals. Right, Finland always medals because Canada, U.S., Russia, even though they won't be competing at the Four Nations face-off, Sweden, like a lot of those other countries have this inflated view of their place in the hockey world, whereas Finland has the healthiest relationship to the idea that when you go to a tournament, if you medal, that's a win. So you always get, like, Team Finland just jumping all over some discouraged team in the bronze medal game.
It's the most predictable thing
ever.
Every tournament.
So when you get to the third place game, Team Finland money line, baby.
Yeah, fair. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf Thomas Drantz. On the other side, we'll maybe hit some of your texts. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Talk more Canucks, some news out of practice, and more. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz, Sportsnet 650. That might be one of my favorite rejoiners. I generally prefer the Canucks Central ones over all of these because I picked them. This one's a good one, though. I'll give credit to, I guess it's Dom. Dom pick this one?
Yeah, but don't give credit to Dom.
So Lena picked this one. Great job, Lena. That was great.
Thanks.
Great selection. You can text in 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors. For over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And we are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Some news from practice today. So I haven't seen any quotes from Rick Tocchet, but our guy, Brendan Batchelor, putting out a quote from Thatcher Demko, who says, I am at a point now where I could potentially have a discussion with Tocchet and be able to back up or what have you between now and the next three games. What have you?
Yeah. Well, what have you? Hopefully a Vezina caliber goaltender, in your battery. At some point this week, mm-hmm. Maybe tomorrow.
I mean, like, reading between the lines, Archer Shelovs, he didn't practice with the main group today. Thatcher Demko, again, like I mentioned earlier, he looked good, according to all reports from practice, was moving well. And to be fair, it feels like it's kind of been imminent for a time as well, this Thatcher Demko potential return. And we'll see what Rick Tocchet has to say about it. But this is the most positive sign we have seen regarding Thatcher Demko in quite a while. So hopefully we see him at some point in the next three games, because Canucks need it. Canucks.
Do they ever.
They need their guy back.
Yeah. I'm actually curious to see exactly how this works with Demko back in the lineup, because let's be real. Kevin Lankinen has, you know, with the exception of a small divot that he hit during the last homestand, been excellent.
Mm-hmm.
He's on a run here.
He made Team Finland probably mostly because of this run here.
Yeah, and he deserved it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Lankinen's been incredible. Nothing short of incredible for the Canucks. He has, honestly, I don't think it's hyperbole to suggest that he has saved their season. You know, given Shelov's struggles, given Patera's struggles in the American League, I mean, where you don't even want to think about where this team would be.
And not even that, but also, like, the defense at times this year, right? Like, he's been there to save them from a defense that maybe isn't up to the level they've played at so far. And
yeah.
Kevin Lankinen has been the guy for this team through 24 games.
Lankinen is one of 13 goaltenders in the NHL who've played 18 games. Okay, there's only 13 guys. And by the way, that list of names is like Vasilevsky, Markstrom, Gustafsson, Hellebuck, Saros, like Igor Shesterkin, Ottinger, the best of the best. And his save percentage, you know, the guys who have a better save percentage than him, who have played as much as him, are Decord, Ottinger, Shesterkin, Vasilevsky, Markstrom, Gustafsson, Hellebuck, Saros. That's it.
That's pretty good.
That's unbelievable. Like, that's shocking. He's been a star performer. Now, when Demko comes back, we know how hard he's worked. We always know how hard Demko works. But we also don't know what it looks like to return from a popliteus injury. Like, we've never seen it happen before. We've never seen it happen with a player, much less a goaltender. Rust would be perfectly understandable.
Yeah.
Right? And even beyond rust, performance impact would be perfectly understandable.
Well, even coming back from any injury, not just one as unique as a popliteus injury, but coming back from any injury for any player is just always, it takes some time.
Especially to the knee. I mean, like, you suffer an ACL or an MCL tear, we expect it to take years before your explosiveness returns. Years, right? Like, now, we have different expectations with goaltenders, but nonetheless, you know, there probably will be some matter of performance impact from as he recovers from this injury. There will probably be some rust. There will probably need to be some attention given in terms of workload, what sort of workload Demko can handle, right? And I think when you put all those three things together, mix it up, consider how good Lankinen has been, you know, Demko performing might not be as simple as Canucks get Vezina caliber starter back. He's now the number one. He's going to play a workhorse starter's, share of games here, right? Like Demko's like, I'll be an option. Maybe I'll back up. That might just be a realistic assessment, not just of where he is physically, but where this team actually is, where they've got kind of a guy who's performed at the level, not just of a number one, but of like a really good high-end number one in this league.
Yeah, he gives you so much leeway to like approach this Thatcher Demko situation as cautiously as possible.
Yeah.
And that's like, that might be end up being the most valuable part of Kevin Lankinen signing is like, yeah, he's winning you all these games and he's playing at an elite level. But if he can also give you the time to get your Vezina caliber goaltender back to Vezina caliber goalie level, like that just adds to the value Lankinen is bringing you. And on top of that, he's going to be really good when he's playing games too.
Well, what if the value of Lankinen is that he's going to play 50 games?
Yeah.
Like, you know, at some point, the Canucks haven't put distance between them and the Flames, right? They've held the fort. They're not out of the woods by any means. Like, this is a team that still has to pick up points. You know, Demko's going to have to perform at a pretty high level, I'd think, to recapture the lion's share of the starts. And that's before you consider all of the uncertainty that surrounds his return, given the unprecedented nature of the injury, right? Like, don't take what you think you know about Canucks goaltending right now to the bank. We have to think about and talk about this, I think, with a level of nuance that we're probably a little bit uncomfortable with, given the fact that Demko is, no question about it, a star performer when he's healthy.
Do you, like, I don't know how uncomfortable it is. I feel like a lot of Canucks fans, seeing the way Lankinen has played, have convinced themselves, and rightfully so, that a split, even when Demko's back to like full health, might be the best thing moving forward. Especially like look, I know he had the popliteus injury, but Demko hasn't been the beacon of health throughout his career, right? So if you have a guy like Kevin Lankinen who is legitimately playing at a number one starter level and at a high level, it just like this feels like, again, best case scenario for the Canucks coming into this year. And it's just been, he's been huge for them, Kevin Lankinen has. 650. We'll hit a couple questions here. Can they give Demko a couple games in Abbotsford to get him back up to speed? That one's unsigned. Everything we've kind of heard about goalies playing these games in Abbotsford is that the environment is so unpredictable that it kind of almost isn't the best to ease into if you're a goalie, right?
Hmm.
Where, like, I think that's kind of what Kevin Woodley has been saying is like, hey, they're just not playing at the level of structure that they are in the NHL, which can sometimes make it easier for a goalie to read and react and work their way back into things. Obviously, playing at any level is going to be maybe a shock to the system for Demko, like playing against legitimate competition. But I just don't know if there's the benefit of him going to Abbotsford.
For a conditioning loan?
For a conditioning stint.
Man. I mean, it's difficult to sort of parse just because I don't know exactly where Demko's at. You know, looking good in practice is one thing, but it's a far more structured environment, a far more controlled environment for a club than a game situation.
Yeah.
Would there be benefits to testing the knee out in game situation? Probably. So, maybe it wouldn't be a surprise if Demko went down and got a game. You know, I don't know exactly what the Abbotsford Canucks schedule looks like. I should probably check that out, and then we can sort of figure it out because, yeah, so they play Saturday, but they're in town for Saturday and Sunday. So, yeah, if the Canucks wanted to slow play this and get him a start on conditioning loan in the AHL, maybe that would make sense. We'll see. I suspect that Demko has a fair bit of control on this process given, you know, how high leverage this is at this point, right? We're talking about a goaltender with only 2 years left on his deal. We're talking about a goaltender who's sustained and publicized the fact that they've sustained a completely unprecedented knee injury, who's only played 3 games since March. Like, there's a lot at stake for this player, right?
Yeah.
And so you'd expect a player in that circumstance, especially a smart one, a clever one who's, you know, spent a lot of time thinking about his rehab, his recovery, approaching it scientifically, to have a fair bit of control. Maybe the club broaches it as a subject, but maybe it's just not what's right for Demko. So, you know, I don't have a take on whether or not it would be the right thing or the wrong thing. I don't know enough about the physical ailment that Demko has come back from. I don't know enough about sort of what he's dealing with, what he's considering as he thinks about when to return and getting up to full speed to really have a strong take on whether or not that would be worthwhile. Club does have the flexibility to consider it, right? There's all sorts of ways that they could do that, and they do have a pair of games down in Abbotsford over the weekend where you could easily manufacture those reps for Demko if that was collectively felt to be the best option for him to return.
So there are those games, and there is also the... It felt like when we were all looking at the schedule, the softest landing spot would have been tomorrow's game against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and based on what he said today, I think we can all lean that he's probably not starting tomorrow unless he's trying to be conservative when he's speaking to media and not get too ahead of himself, which he seems to have been doing lately. But I think we would all be very surprised if he got the start tomorrow. If he backs up tomorrow, I think at this point we can all say, hey, that wouldn't be surprising. But getting the start tomorrow, I would be surprised personally.
I won't be surprised by anything at this point, to be honest with you. I thought Demko would return after the road trip. Dolly Wall's reporting sort of made me second guess that during the show, but Friday just feels to me like it makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Given what we've heard about the rehab, how often he's been with the team, you know, it's hard for me to imagine that he hasn't been ready for a bit here. So his commentary too would allude, like, I wonder how much he's just being humble by sort of kicking it to the coaches direction. Like, I feel like I'm close. We'll talk to the coaches and see what's what, right? That to me felt almost more like a political answer, because the substance of it is I'm ready.
So Rick Tocchet speaking right now. We'll play the full availability later, but he said it didn't say when Thatcher Demko will be back in the lineup, but says they don't want to rush him, and Demko's work ethic is second to none, so when he's ready, he will let them know. So Rick Tocchet kind of putting it back in Thatcher Demko's court, being like, hey, maybe they just haven't talked after practice right now. Right? I don't know what the situation is.
Well, we'll see. Well, like, this is obviously quite a interesting one. we'll have to see exactly how it works out.
This question, Liam, the F1 guy, will the market be shocked if Demko is the backup for the rest of the season? And what would that mean for Kevin Lankinen come July 1st? I wouldn't be shocked if through the rest of the season, it's like a 60-40 Lankinen Demko split. Keep him as fresh as possible for the playoffs. Assuming he comes back and he's healthy and there's no issues. I don't know. Do you think it's closer to 50-50 at some point? Or are you still just like, it just depends?
I think we have to suspend everything we think we know about Vancouver's goaltending situation. I think this is a uniquely fraught...
Okay.
I think this is a uniquely fraught set of circumstances. Like, I think Demko's injury recovery process is going to dictate a fair bit of usage here, but I also think there's a world, absolutely, given what Lankinen's done already, where he's the club's best option.
Yeah.
And I also think there's a world where Demko comes back and looks like Demko, and he's clearly the best option of anyone you could have on the entire planet mm-hmm. to start games. So, I mean, how do you weigh those possibilities given that we haven't seen Demko play since March? Since I guess he played the one game in April. So, I just find it incredibly difficult to handicap. I'm ready for whatever in the Canucks.
I'm trying to give you I'm trying to make you give us a definitive thing.
Well, no, but why would I?
Truly,
think about it. Everyone was sure that Artur Shelovs was going to run with the Canucks spot in net, mm-hmm. right? In fact, when the Canucks rolled through the summer and we weren't exactly sure what Demko's status would be, like, they entered training camp with Shelovs and Patera.
Yeah.
You know, that it was only 3 days into camp that they signed Lankinen. And if you'd told people then, hey, in 2 months, Lankinen's going to A, make the Finnish team at the Four Nations faceoff, and two, we're going to, you know, be willing to consider the possibility that not just that Lankinen is ahead of Artur Shelovs on the depth chart, that's settled. There's not even a question about that. But that maybe he should be at least sharing time with Demko on his return, you know, no one would have believed you. And I promise you, 2 months from now, we're going to have a scenario in our hands, one way or the other, that will seem, you know, it'll be within the range of realistic probability, but it won't be something that we can really anticipate. Goaltending's just too volatile. And this injury that Demko's dealing with, we have no frame of reference, no history to lean on in sort of shaping our expectations here.
650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. So last segment, you mentioned, we were talking about the Four Nations face-off, and you said the U.S. has the best defenseman in the NHL playing for their team. And obviously our text box, normally Quinn Hughes defenders, kind of came to the side of Cale Makar. And we're like, well, he's Canadian and he's playing for Canada now. He's the best defenseman. Do you want to expand on that take? Because we got some people saying, Cale Makar is on Canada. What do you mean? And this one, Cale Makar is a better defenseman than Quinn Hughes. He's every bit as good defensively. He kills penalties, and he's done it on the big stage. That's Ian and Coquitlam.
Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't control play like Quinn Hughes does. Like, he's not the primary engine of that Colorado Avalanche team. Not that he's by any means a passenger. He's a key driver. He's one of the best. He's definitely in the mix for second best defenseman on the planet. He's just not an engine. Like, Quinn Hughes impacts games like elite centermen do. There's just no other defender in hockey like that. It's a completely unique player type, a completely unique dynamic. Like, when Makar plays with Nathan MacKinnon, Makar benefits more than MacKinnon from that partnership. Mm-hmm. When Quinn Hughes plays with either JT Miller or Elias Pettersson, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson benefit more from that partnership. Yeah. Like, that's the distinction. And you have to wait, in my opinion, those players that drive, those players that are real engines. And, you know, in Colorado, Makar is an incredible player. The thing that Makar has that Quinn Hughes doesn't, right? He's got the physical stature, which lets him throw, you know, hits that Quinn Hughes can't. He also has this elite, I've never seen a shot maker like Cale Makar from the point. He's honestly one of the best shooting defensemen I've ever seen. Certainly the best since Shea Weber. And to include or to combine that with the pace that he's able to play with the dynamic forays through the neutral zone, I mean, it's unique, right? There's something, it's like halfway between Scott Niedermeyer and Shea Weber, you get Cale Makar. That sounds pretty good. It sounds, in fact, incredible. So this is not to disparage him. It's just that the way Hughes impacts the game is more valuable, in my opinion, and rarer. Quinn Hughes, I think, is the best defenseman on the planet. I actually think not just that the gap between them is narrowed. Like, I think the gap was never as wide as it appeared because of team effects. And in fact, I think Quinn Hughes has opened up a sizable lead because the way that this guy cooks, like, let's put the month of November into context for Quinn Hughes. Look, what we've just seen the last 15 Canucks games, going back to, you know, November 1. Okay. Over the last 15 games, there are five players in the NHL that have more points than Quinn Hughes. He has 21 points, 4 goals, 17 assists. Across the last 15 Canucks games. Five players in the NHL that have more points, including forwards. It's not defensemen. All players. Mm-hmm. All players in the league. So he's, you know, in a like seven-way tie for sixth in scoring points-wise over that period of time. He's done that, you know, with his, like, the top five-on-four playmaker on this team in JT Miller not being in the lineup, with his regular defense partner out for the last three games. He's kept a team that's massively shorthanded afloat. They went 9-5-1 across those 10 games. And here's the craziest part, Josh. He did all of that while being wildly unlucky by the bounces. Shooting percentage, south of 10% at 5-on-5. On-ice save percentage, below .880 at 5-on-5. Like, Quinn Hughes was massively unlucky over the course of the past 4 weeks, 15-game stretch. And he managed 21 points, was not outscored despite brutal bounces at both ends of the ice at 5-on-5, was by far the team's most important play driver and captained a team to staying afloat 9-5-1. That's what Quinn Hughes did in a month in which he was unlucky. So what does it look like when the wind's at his back? Like, come on, this guy's at a totally different level right now. Period. Yeah. Period.
And it, I know you and Jamie have talked about it a bit, but it feels like this is a this stretch, while JT Miller's out, Thatcher Demko's out, now Filip Peronik is out, this feels like a season-defining stretch in terms of like challenging for the Hart Trophy. And I feel like that conversation, it hasn't been broached enough yet by national media. I know Elliot Friedman is in Quinn Hughes' corner for the Hart this year, but it feels like he hasn't been getting the national attention in terms of that level of, like, everyone now knows that he is a Norris level player. Nobody's doubting his abilities, but it's more about the just crazy level that you mentioned, that you outlined, that he's playing at right now. And it's not something that any other defenseman in the NHL is doing. And the thing about me that stands out so much when you talk about the Cale Makar Quinn Hughes comparison is when Makar's playing with Nathan MacKinnon, he's playing great. But when he's not playing with MacKinnon, I'm not saying he's playing horrible, but he's not playing near the level he is with Nathan MacKinnon. Whereas Quinn Hughes, we just outlined the players that are missing, and he's still playing like normal Quinn Hughes, and maybe even better. And that's, to me, when we talk about guys who should be competing for the Hart, should be considered for the Hart Trophy, that's what I look at as what defines those players. And Quinn Hughes, to me, surely fits in that mold. And I think as the season goes on, he's going to continue to get that buzz. If he gets some more of that luck that you mentioned going his way, some of these guys return to the lineup as well, that's going to play a big part. But man, he's been so good. And it felt like there was no, like, after last season, it felt like, hey, like, we underestimated him again, and he keeps building on it. And now going into this season, it still feels like he has more ceiling that, personally, like, I knew he was an amazing defenseman. He has more ceiling than I thought he had, and he continues to build on what he did last year to win the Norris. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. This one, don't forget, Quinn is younger than Makar as well. That's true. That plays in his favor, I guess, in terms of, hey, like, he's had less time to develop.
Yeah, he's caught up. No, I mean, he hasn't just caught up. He's surpassed. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It just is what it is. Watch the games.
650-650. Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the texts coming in. On the other side, we hope to hear from Rick Tocchet and everything he had to say about Thatcher Demko, and maybe some news on JT Miller as well. That's coming up next. Canucks Talk, Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you. You can text in as well, 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line, if you have any questions before the show is up here. And we are coming to you live from the Kintec studio as well. Big news day for the Canucks. A lot going on and off the ice, and they practiced today at Rogers Arena. First practice back after a lengthy road trip. So, you know, the media here was waiting to converge on Rick Tocchet and getting their first face-to-face with him in a while for a lot of these guys. So let's go to Rick Tocchet now, speaking to media today after practice.
Yeah, for me, for Demmer, he's looked really good in practice. He's in a good space right now, and when he comes and he's ready to go, I'm all for it. You know, he's a huge part of our team.
Play him tomorrow?
I'd like to play him anytime I can get him. No, listen, when he comes to me, we'll cross that bridge.
Has it been hard from a coaching standpoint to be patient? I know Kevin's played great, so that's made everything easier. But is it hard to be patient? You see a guy in practice, and you've told us several times how good he's looking in practice, and yet you still don't know when he might play.
Yeah. Well, I played for Jim Schoenfeld. I remember Shoney used to tell me, as a coach, you go into games who you have, and you can't worry about who you don't have. That process will happen. I don't try to worry about that stuff. I only worry about today. Now, obviously, I know what's going on and when the guy could come back. I get that part, but I can't worry about that stuff. I got to focus on the guys I have. That's the approach you have to have. I remember Shoney used to tell me that.
Rick, what do we make of the fact that he was one of two goalies out there today. Sort of, where was Artie in all of this?
Yeah, well, you listen, when a guy's getting close, you want him to have the net. Obviously, Lanx, you give him the net. So I think when you have three goalies, Marco can work on them early. You know, you don't want a steady diet of it. We're going to have to figure something out after that. But for now, like right short term, Demmer's got to have the net, a full practice of the net. We can't have him sharing a net. And Lanx.
Quinn today?
Maintenance day. But that was my decision, not his. He felt he could practice, but I wanted him off today.
I know that there's a lot of voices on a decision as important as when Thatcher might come back, but ultimately, is it up to him once medical people say he's okay, which I presume they've said because he's been practicing a while, is it up to him to come and tell you I'm ready?
Yeah, I think it's individual based. From my experience, Thatcher's not a guy that he knows his body. His work ethic is next to none that I've ever coached. So he has the latitude for me as a some guys you have to push. I don't think you push him. He's going to, trust me, he wants to play. So when he comes to me and he's ready, you know he's ready. So that's the way I approach it with Thatcher.
Rick, when you look at this team, the discrepancy between the home and the road, how do you explain it?
Yeah, I think it comes in your head now. I look at our home record, and I was pissed a couple, you guys know 3 weeks ago, there's been pockets of our game, not good. But there's been some good stuff. So we were a good home team last year. So I think it's in some of our head a little bit. Maybe it's some preparation. We got to adjust. Maybe it's on me to switch some things I told you guys about. I don't want to make a big deal of it. It's, 3-5-2 or something like that. Is it a big enough sample size? Yeah, but I don't think it's a concerning where we're going into Columbus. Oh, my God, we better play well. It's a home game. I think I don't want that in the guys' heads. I just want them to have the identity that we've started to create here the last 5-6 games the same at home.
Is it important to have some success on this road trip just so that it doesn't get into guys' heads?
Well, I think this road trip, so we had some key guys that played some key moments for us. We had good goaltending. We were behind. We came back. We were ahead, and we had kept. There's a little bit of everything. Does that help coming home? Yeah, because if we can have that same mentality at home, you have a better chance of winning.
Can you talk a little bit about that next man up. I mean, no JT. Brock was out for a bit. No Demko, of course, for all year long. It just seems like whoever you put in the lineup is really stepping up and getting the job done for him.
Yeah, I think it's important. That's why you have your base, your system. You got to rely when things don't go well. Can you fall back on your system? I think the guys have done that. You're going to have some guys that struggle, and when they struggle, you can you stay with the system? Sometimes when guys struggle, they become individuals. I felt that the guys that have struggled have stayed in the system part, and that's a good thing. So that's the way I look at it. But I see a lot of guys, even the guys that some of the guys that were struggling a while ago, they're coming out of it. You can see that they're getting their game together. So that's a good thing for us.
Calling your board, gave you five right shot defensemen out there today. What's the thinking?
Yeah, I think it's important. Abby's like an hour away. I think it's important to get these guys up and practice with us. Let Mackey come up the same thing. I think it's important, whether they stay or not. That's a roster thing. I'll talk to Patrick, but I think it's important that these guys practice with us.
One guy that has stayed is Max Sasson. What have you liked from what he's given you since you brought him up?
Yeah, I like this first two games. I think with guys like that, it's a sustainability. But I want to see him at center. I might put him at center tomorrow. I'm contemplating it because I think he's got some speed. So we'll see. I might have him at center tomorrow, but I've liked pockets of his game. I really have. And it's tough. Sometimes when I shorten the bench, a guy's sitting there for 8 minutes, that's hard to do. It's a hard, but that's the world we live in. You're going to have to make sure that you're not a liability if you sit there for 8 minutes and go on the ice. And I think that, especially last game, I think they played 9 minutes. I thought he did a nice job when it came to that situation.
You talk about it being sort of a challenge for those guys to find consistency. Yeah. How nice is it that you have multiple guys in Abbotsford that you can call upon, whether it's him or Baines or Lekkermäki or whoever it might be, to rotate them through if consistency is an issue for them?
Well, we got some options. We're looking for an identity in that fourth line. There's Giuseppe, he's hurt right now, but he's viable later. Carlson. I mean, he's a guy that down low can hold on to pucks. He's a menace in front. Baines, can he find his game? We got some options. Sass now. Rats, the same thing. Nothing's guaranteed, but we at least have five or six guys that can somebody find their identity. can you hold pucks? Can you be really good on the forecheck? Can you be a penalty killer? Like, you know, Deej is a penalty killer. So, you know, sometimes you look at special teams, upper hand. Leonard Mackey, if he gets caught, he's a power play guy. So these are the things you got to look at. That's part of their identity. So,
Rick, when you come back from a long Eastern road trip like that, what are the challenges for guys in terms of readjusting and all that? How hard is that?
It's hard. It's a mental thing for me, though. It told the players today, we got to play uncomfortable tomorrow. You know, I thought it's the typical coach's handbook. I practiced the first 20 was a little sloppy. And you know, it's kind of, and my point is, why does it have to be sloppy? So I think it's preparation. So we're warned, you know, we got to be ready tomorrow. You know, we're playing a team that's really good off the rush. So make sure you're ready to play. We can't wait till the second period to get going. So it's a mental thing.
As a coach, though, do you have to readjust things in practice for the first couple of days?
Yeah. Whether you back off, whether my day tomorrow, how much video to show, how much not, individual meetings. I think I got to switch it up, too. I can't keep doing the same thing because, you know, I think it's important that these guys get something different, and it's up to me to help them out. I got to get...
Sorry.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Sorry, Trevor.
That's good.
Other than Quinn, Lankanen would probably be your MVP. So what happens to him when Thatcher comes back?
Well, it's a good problem to have. You know, we got a lot of games. There's going to be some lots of time for each whoever in the net. But you know, I don't even think of that right now. I just think it's I'm like Lanks. You just think of the game. You know, I know we play Columbus. That's all I think about. He's playing, and we'll worry about that when the bridge when that happens.
Where would you be without him?
I don't know. All I know is he's sitting out a week before camp, and whether he couldn't get a job. I don't know. I actually don't know the situation. All I know is that he's a fun guy to coach. The players love him. He's added a lot of character in that room too. Obviously, his play has helped, but obviously, he's a character guy.
There was a report out this morning that JT is back skating. Can you confirm that? And is there any?
Yeah, he's skating. Yeah.
Here.
He's been skating. Yeah. I mean, like Jim said, it's between JTs. There's privacy and all that stuff, and I've talked to him, so we have a plan, and that's it. That's really what it's up to.
Switching pages for a moment. Four Nations face-off rosters came out.
Yeah.
As an assistant coach with the Canadian Crew, what do you make of that roster?
Well, I think it's a great roster. I mean, you know, there's always a couple guys that, you know, they get snubbed, and it's the same with the Americans. You can say that Finland, you know, it's I was in those meetings trying to pick guys. It's tough because you're nitpicking over great players. So, it's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun. Can't wait.
Did you have a call yesterday? Did you get to call anybody? Or
what's that?
How did yesterday go for you in terms of?
We had a bunch of Zoom calls last week or 2 weeks ago, so we knew the team about a week ago. I think we had this. They announced it, but I think 5 days ago was the. But the good thing about it, I mean, there's some good debates and arguments. It was fun to be part of that process, it was just fun. It was for that experience for me.
Tough to keep that secret.
What's that?
Who was on the roster?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Coop threatened me. So he threatened all of us, but yeah, I think it got out a day early. So I texted him. I blamed him. So, but yeah.
So with Lankanen and on the Four Nations, how good is it to see that, you know, he is getting the recognition around the league for his strong start?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously biased, but you know, I was like, I'd be shocked that he wasn't on it just from the way he's played for us. But yeah, no, I'm really proud of him. I mean, you're talking about a guy, like I said, he's out for a week at camp, didn't know where he was going. All of a sudden, now he's going to represent Finland. But he won 10 games there and on the road. Those are nice milestones for a guy.
And when we look at Lincoln's play, how beneficial has it been that he's been at this top level? So, you know, there's no discussion of should we bring back Demko early and potentially risk another injury.
Well, it didn't matter what kind of goaltender we get. We're never going to rush Demmer. I mean, this guy's it's a long term with Demmer. So, we're never going to play a guy that's not ready to go. So, but Lankanen, the way he's played, obviously helps.
How do you like Noah Juulsen's play lately?
I think Noah's been a really, I think it's unfair to judge Noah because he was playing the game and he'd be out for five games. And I think when he's played a bunch of games in a row, and you could see his game coming. And that's the hardest thing with these guys. I think it's hard to judge some guys because, you know, when you're in and out of the lineup and you make a mistake, the next mistake gets compounded. I find he's making less mistakes because he's getting more traction. And he's done a great job for us the last 2 years I've been here in playing that role.
How do you appreciate how he sacrifices his body?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's the thing with those type of D. He's got to. You know, he's got to be a shot blocker. He's got to be a simple, reliable guy. And he's got to be good at it, to stay in the league. And Ian Cole last year, and I had Ian Cole in Pittsburgh. Those guys eat pucks. That's a lot of courage. It's hard to sit in front of a 100-mile-an-hour shot, take one in the ribs. That's probably his hardest thing, you know, other than taking a punch in the face. I would say that's second. So,
when you said you were contemplating Sasson at center,
yeah,
is that more that you want to see him at center, or has Ratu maybe hit a bit of a wall of any kind? Or?
No, I don't know if it's hitting a wall. I think sometimes you throw something fresh. I know he's played wing last year. I think it's just a freshness, and I'd like to see Sass. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but it's something I had him at center today. I wanted to see maybe him at center and, see the pace he has for us.
What about Ratu? This is his second time you guys sent him down. Yeah. Back. He's been here for a little while now, but where are you with his?
Yeah, I think his work ethic is his best. Like, for a young kid, he's the top I've ever had as a coach. I think his play now has to – he's got to – as the play goes on, I think I find he's at a fast pace where he's got to slow down the game in his mind. That's being a young kid. I mean, I would say that's the only thing. If I had to nitpick, he's got to know when to go and when not to go and get himself good angles. But that comes with experience and that comes with time. And it's okay to sit out a couple of games. It's okay. It's not the end of the world.
There is Rick Tocchet speaking to media today after Canucks practice at Rogers Arena. Talks about Demko, talks about JT Miller, and...
Well, I wouldn't say about JT Miller. He has a plan.
He said words.
There's a plan.
Regarding JT Miller.
There's a plan, but it's private?
Yeah. Wants to give him his privacy. Didn't say where he was skating either, just said JT is skating. Wants to give him his privacy. They have a plan, and that was kind of it.
Yeah.
So that's your JT Miller update. A little more a forthcoming, I guess, on Thatcher Demko and Quinn Hughes, saying with Demko, once Demko comes to Tocchet, they will cross that bridge, and they're getting close, obviously, so they wanted Demko to have the full net in practice today to try to get him back up to speed.
I want to shout out, I was in a hot tub yesterday, actually.
Good for you.
It was great. And a gentleman... by the name of Nadim came up and introduced himself. He didn't know what I looked like, but he recognized me from the laugh. I was hanging out with a buddy playing cribbage at the Cribbage in the hot tub.
Wow.
with pints of beer. And
you were getting after it
at the Jericho Tennis Club. It was very very patrician of me all around. I also did a cold dip, by the way. It was cold.
Ah,
it was very very cold. Anyway,
you're allowed to drink at the hot tub there.
Maybe I shouldn't have copped to that. I don't know. We were doing it. No one seemed to have a problem with it. We weren't too rowdy. We were just playing cribbage.
Yeah, they were getting after it. So playing cribbage and such.
So Nadim overhears my laugh and says, you know, he told a story that wasn't very nice. He said that he sometimes listens to podcasts with like his Bluetooth headset, right? He listens to, and his wife thinks that he shouldn't spend too much time with a Bluetooth headset. So he was listening to Canucks talk. His wife was like, you should take the headset off. He took the headset off and started just listening to it. And she heard my laugh and said, you can put the headset back on. So that wasn't great. But he had a bone to pick with me.
Oh.
Had a bone to pick with me.
Shocking.
Our regular listeners will remember that I have a big problem with backing into parking spots.
Do you?
Yeah. I think it's deeply selfish. It takes way too long.
Deeply selfish.
You inconvenience everybody else.
Are you just saying in public, like in a public parking
lot?
Yeah,
like busy mall parking lot, big line of people behind you. You're the guy who gets the parking spot. And then you're like, Oh, wait for me. Yeah, you got to wait for me because I want to pretend that I'm an astronaut when I get back into my car and lifting off into traffic like an absolute D-bag.
I 100% agree with
Thank you.
I disagree.
There's nothing I want to, I would like to delete a vehicle that does that.
It's so much easier. Okay.
Lena.
Hold on.
That's okay. my producer right there.
So it's so much easier, though, to like stop traffic while you're backing into a spot than it is backing out of a spot. Like, to me, it's much more inconvenient to back out of a spot.
Well, that's what, you know, ICBC safety guides would tell you as well, Josh. So, anyway, I think that's cool for you. I just still think you're wildly selfish if you ever do it.
Fair enough.
So, he was explaining to me basically what you were, that he's a big fan of backing into parking spots, and he had a bone to pick with me, and he was trying to just, like, get at why I had a problem with it. And I said, you know, it's very much like when you get on a flight and someone in front of you reclines.
Sure.
Because it's like, when you're looking for a parking spot at the mall, busy mall, for example.
Especially right now, in December.
We're all in hell together. Okay? We are all in hell together. This is the worst place on the planet, and we are all just doing our best to make the experience last as little as possible. It sucks for everyone, and you've made it suck more for everyone else, right? That's my problem, is like, this sucks. We all know it sucks. Be an adult and don't add to the suffering of anyone else. It's very much like reclining on a flight. So anyway, Nadim leaves me and my buddy, and me and my buddy are there, and he's like, you have a problem with reclining on flights? And I'm like, yeah, you don't? And he was like, dude, does not matter. If I get on a flight, I'm reclining immediately.
Man. No.
And I was like,
I don't do that.
He was like, yeah, my seat reclines for a reason. I should. And I was like, unless there's a child behind me, I'm never reclining. Ever. Yeah. I never recline. I just don't believe in it.
Especially if there's a screen on the back too, because then I feel bad. You're like messing up the optimal viewing point.
And so then I explained to him that when people recline on me, I will ask them to put their seat back up.
No, you don't.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, I fly 150 times a year, right? Like, I'm always on planes.
How do people respond? Do they just go, oh, sorry, and then put it up? Or
people are terrified.
Yeah. If someone did that to me, I'd be like, oh.
Oh, my God.
Why is he calling me out for this?
And so he said, not only are you a jerk for doing that.
Yeah.
But the fact that there are people like you out there has ruined reclining for me forever.
I will say, I like...
He's like, I never considered that someone would ever be like, hey, you're being a selfish git. Put your seat back up.
That's my thing. But the reason I don't recline is because I'm worried probably about confrontation. But mainly just like, I don't want to be a hindrance to other people.
Yeah.
Also,
I love confrontation.
Thing.
I'm just like, oh, please, object.
No, we're aware.
Yeah.
The screen flips. Like, you could like pull it out. Yeah, so when you recline and someone's doing that and you can't, the screen's now in your face or whatever.
Yeah.
You
or
can
like
actually move it.
Or first of all, I'm 6 foot tall. Secondly, I'm like 225 pounds. Like, I don't want my space compromised like that. Also, I like to work on planes. I spend a lot of time writing on planes or transcribing or doing whatever busy work I have to do. And the moment someone reclines, all of a sudden I'm like literally typing on my stomach.
What if it's an overnighter, though?
No. If it's a long flight, I generally pay for the upgrade so that I don't have to worry
about
it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm talking like 5 hours or less, continental flights. Don't recline or you're a jerk. And I want you all to know, there are people like me out there that will tell you you're being a jerk and politely ask you to lift your seat back up.
You're the 1%.
But the fact that my buddy A had never considered that it was rude, and B is now less likely to recline knowing that there's jerks like me out there, makes me, I resolved. First of all, I wanted to shout out Nadim. But secondly, I was like, I'm going to use my platform to scare other people like my buddy. I want other people to know.
Other weak-minded folks like us.
There are people like me out there
that make the world a better place.
That will tell you when you're being a jerk on a flight.
So, okay.
So you're basically telling everyone you're the Dark Knight.
I'm not the hero you deserve, but I'm the one you need right now.
He's strength.
What's worse? Someone reclining their chair in front of you, or someone with long hair draping their hair over the chair?
Gross.
Because that's the worst thing to me.
You know what happened to me? A man in front of me put his hands behind the seat and his hands were so big, the fingers were actually into my screen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he kept doing it.
See, I think you got to just be comfortable telling people. Bungalow Jim says, I'm 6'5". If someone in front of me reclines, they're an absolute jerk. 100%. 100%. Someone else says, a small recline is fine. Maximum recline is insane. I will say, if someone puts their seat back just a little bit, I'm not going to comment.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes
it's the maximum recline that I'm going to comment on. If you go back an inch or two, I'm probably just going to let it slide most of the time. So I think that's correct. 100%.
I got a text saying, I don't recline on flights, but I will do it on purpose now, hoping Drance is sitting behind me.
we have someone else. I need to find it. But there was someone said the idea is that they buy the flight so they get the inch of recline. And it's like, you are falling for the trap. This sucks for all of us. And you are falling for the trap of being like, well, my right is this extra 3 inches. Who cares about the collective? Stop it. Everyone is less comfortable if everyone behaves that way. This is classic prisoner's dilemma stuff. Stop being a patsy of the man.
Get it
together.
What if everybody in unison reclined their seats? Like, everybody was reclined. So then it's like, hey, everyone's still in the same situation.
If everyone was reclined?
Everyone's reclining, and you're the one that hasn't reclined.
Well, I still wouldn't, because I'm not a jerk. I'd just be like, wow, society has gone to hell. That's what I would say.
You know what's also bad? When that's society has gone
so
to hell.
So extreme.
Yeah. What's also...
that's extreme?
That is extreme.
It's like, man, it sucks to be the last sane person in a crazy world. That would be my reaction.
You know what's also bad? When people, like, let's say you're flying to California and you see people with travel pillows. It's like, okay, guys, 2-hour flight. What are we doing here? We don't, like, you can sleep, but you don't need maximum comfort while you're sleeping.
And they're obnoxious about it.
I'm not like, yeah, and they got the whole setup too. I don't know.
What about if someone texted in saying, are you still a jerk if you back in with an EV truck that has the trunk in the front?
The frunk.
So for ease of...
like putting your stuff.
Access to the trunk.
Okay, I will say, you are not a jerk for doing it, in fact. But in the moment, because I'm not going to know where your trunk is, I will think you are.
Yeah.
So that's the compromise.
And that's when he's got to do a PSA when he gets out of the car.
I want you to know, you are...
the trunk is here, guys. I'm sorry. It's right in the front.
I want you to know, unsigned texter, you are not a jerk for parking, so you have easy access to your frunk. But I will, not knowing that in the moment, believe that you are and think less of you forever.
I'm not going to lie. I also just don't believe in my ability to pull into a parking space forward anymore. Unless I'm like going straight into it. If I have to turn into a parking space, I'm more confident backing in. Because I've always backed in.
Well, and I do want to note, because I'm not truly off my rocker, I have no objections to a pull-through. Oh. That's just best practices.
Pull-throughs are great.
There is...
I will search for a pull-through spot.
Okay, the two most satisfying... Now, the two most satisfying experiences driving are A, getting a pull-through in a crowded parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal. And two... driving down Smythe,
right,
with the timed lights where you can go all the way to Burrard without hitting a red.
That's the dream.
It's so good. When that happens, when you actually pull it off, that's just like, I mean, I don't know that there's a better feeling on the planet. It's like a better feeling than when, you know, you have one of those really good sneezes, or like when you get your wisdom teeth out and you get the like little liquid thing to ease the pain. Like, it's one of the most satisfying things on the planet.
I appreciate everyone texting in today. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Everyone listening as well. We will be back tomorrow getting you set for a Canucks game. Canucks and Blue Jackets starting a 6-game homestand. Thank you to Lena. Thank you to Arash. I actually have a read to do before we go. Hold on. Sportsnet 650 and Barnstein Brewing have dropped the gloves for a new pale ale that's perfect for hockey season. The brand new 5 for Fighting Hazy Pale. This crisp and refreshing hazy pale ale, I can do this, I promise, is a celebration of flavor and balance. Brewed with our farm-grown hops, it boasts a delightful harmony of fruity and floral notes. Each sip hints at the juicy essence of ripe peach, complemented by a soft, velvety mouthfeel that keeps you coming back for more. Four packs will be available starting December 9th at Barnside Brewing Tap Room, participating retail locations or on tap at your local pub. Thank you to Lena. Thank you to Arash. Thank you to Drance. We'll be back tomorrow. I've been Josh Elliott-Wolf. This has been Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.